Storm Pegs, A Life Made in Shetland. Written and read by Jen Hadfield. If I have a heaven, that will be mine. Mary Kingsley, Travels in West Africa. One story, one. No, too many stories all woven together to go and try and unravel it, to find one. Mary Blance, In Conversation. Introduction. Earth, noun, the direction of a supposed line from any point in the heavens to the beholder. Is a earth situated on a supposed line between the beholder and the horizon, the point whence the wind blows, a point of the heavens as delineated on the mariner's compass. Earth, verb, to contend with, to argue in a captious manner, to strive after, to try, to obtain. A glossary of the Shetland dialect, James Stout Angus. Recently, kayaking with my sister Tash, we rounded the headland of the small island where I now live. We slipped between the sharp teeth of tumbled stacks. We let the gentle swell ease us into a long, low-ceilinged cave. It terminated in a blunt wall like the back of the throat, but was connected to another cave by a snoring tunnel through which the swell broke with an echoing gurgle and a smack. I held my breath and nosed further in, irrationally terrified, while her confident exclamations echoed off the rocky roof. Looking down through the water, I was almost afraid of what I might see, but it was just macaroon pink sea urchins, slowly flailing kelp, and pale blue water, achingly clear. I have walked that headland, crossing the roof of the cave, under its pelt of stony soil and heavily grazed grass many times, never knowing it was there. After living in Shetland for 17 years, I still feel as if what I know about my home is next to nothing. Surfaces and veils, gossip and story, the translation of experience out of the local language, the constant but enigmatic company of history, so that past and present, like the twin strands of yarn in a fair Algansi, constantly weave over and under each other. I live in a perpetual state of discovery, like sudden plunge pools of intimacy with places, people, creatures. As if we were co-steering, you and I, edging along a greasy black ledge of rock over hard green waves, looking for footholds, cheek by jowl to the wet face of the cliff. This is how it is when we move into another culture, another language, another landscape, another people's history. One night, for example, in late summer, Magni, one of my nearest neighbours, shows me how to bone out herring. Now, he says figuratively, how do we get to Texas from here? He pierces the plump pewter skin and curls his fingers around the long loose internal organs to pull them out, cutting free the roe, laying it like a limp orange tropical flower on one side. He runs his thumbnail along the membrane under the arch of the cavity to pierce it and rinses out the thick blackish blood. He cuts off the head and tail and pokes around the end of the spine with his knife, as you would delicately prise a splinter from your skin. Then he works his right thumb under the spine, peeling it from the soft flesh with the fingers of his left hand. It makes soft snicking sounds, like tiny doors unlocking. He turns the fish and works his thumbs up the other side of the spine and lifts the whole thing clear, bristling with long, fine, curved rib bones like whiskers. He sifts oatmeal over the butterflied fillet and fries it in an electric pan. First we eat the fried milts, a mouthful of something more buttery than cream, and the popcorn-textured roes. And then we put away the double fillets, two or three with toast and salt and cracked black pepper, with water, then a mug of good sachet coffee. We don't speak while we eat, although sometimes I smile and sigh.